Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
What's the key to a quick and fun travel escape? Enjoy public art outside, or outsider art inside, and refresh your sense of history with awe-inspiring parks and museums. Vicksburg is the key to the South.
You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. Appreciate all you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. Want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffee House and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffee House here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. It'd be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Mount Carmel.
Would be a little weird, but I'm sure there you can find some kind of caramel.
Well, it's caramel. Yeah. I know. If it was Mount Caramel, I would want Brupolo to be there.
I'm trying to make it work here.
Yeah.
But actually, that would be a pretty cool place for a Strange Brew.
Hey, if there was a mountain of caramel, it'd be like a volcano, just an ooze. You know,
that'd be like something like straight out of Willy Wonka.
Yeah, or you just take a stick with some marshmallows or chocolate.
Willy Wonka
marble.
And the
caramel mountain.
That's right.
And the what? The cocoa factory.
Come with me, and you'll see a world of pure imagination.
That's how.
There's a mannequin right in front of the door. I don't know what that is. You know, there's like a mannequin.
Oh, it's Strange Brew. Yes. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I've seen that movie.
We're tripping in here.
Oh, my gosh. There's no earthly way of knowing which way the podcast is going. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away. It's Strange Brew Coffee House.
There's something else in those cocoa beans.
I know. Hand me that piece of paper right there underneath your shirt, by the way.
You still are not.
I can't memorize that phone number. Remember that every time you support.
I thought you said you did have this.
No, I have Advantage Business Systems.
Why do you have so many of these papers?
I don't know. They gave me a bunch.
And what's dripped on these?
I think somebody spilled some water on them. And by somebody, I mean me.
Okay.
So.
Off to a rousing start here today.
Pip Printing and Signs, reliable service for every business need. It just means this, guys. If you need to get customers into your business, Pip Printing and Signs can make that happen for you. If you're a Mississippi State fan, how do you turn this deal down? You can work with Pip Printing and Signs, 30 years of experience helping businesses just like yours. And then whatever you spend with them, 10% of that goes right back to the Bulldog Initiative in your name. You already spend money on printing if you're a business owner. By spending it with Pip Printing and Signs and telling them that you heard about it on Thunder and Lightning, you're going to help the Bulldog Initiative without spending an extra penny of your own money. That's a win-win, guys. 601-499-5216. That gets you in touch with Camden Baker. He's the CEO. That's his number. That's how committed he is to you. He's giving you his personal number to get you taken care of. When you need printing, call Pip today. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you are looking for, and I know you're looking for it. We're getting, we're getting through baseball season. Football season will be here before you know it. When you show up for a new era of Mississippi State football, you need to show up in new gear. The state script needs to be on your chest. The interlocking, the M over S, the banner M, leave it at home. We're leaving those days behind us here, and it starts with a trip to College Corner. Two locations in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online at collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler is Starkville's flagship restaurant, the place to grab the best meal in town. Lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. If you want to eat good, you're going to go to Restaurant Tyler. If you've got a chance to take a special occasion and you want to have a great meal, you need to do it at Restaurant Tyler. They have the best steaks in town, great pasta, chicken. Their appetizer selection is fantastic, and they have my favorite dessert in Starkville, the famous stuffed pancake. If you want to have a special occasion, you need to make a reservation at Restaurant Tyler. 16 Priority One Bank locations throughout Central Mississippi here to serve you. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide. That's where you're going to find information on what location is nearest you and also of all the financial services Priority One Bank can offer you. You're going to be pleasantly surprised, I think. If you think they're just a small-town bank that maybe they just offer, you know, checking and savings accounts and that's about it, no, it's a lot more than that. It's all the stuff that you can get at a big corporate bank, but you don't have to worry about the service that a big corporate bank would give you, which would be non-existent. This, they know how to treat you like a neighbor because that's what you are. You're a Mississippi banker. They're a Mississippi bank. You're a Mississippian. It's an easy decision for you. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. Oh, hey there, Robbie.
Oh, hey there, Brian.
There we go.
Had to think about that for a second. Just make sure that I got it down.
Good man. Well, if you're not a fan of Robbie Faulk, if you're one of those people who's like, I like Thunder and Lightning, but when Robbie talks, it's just awful.
There's quite First a few off, of those.
I don't appreciate you talking about my friend like that. But secondly,
you know, there's quite a few out there.
There are, but the opposite is true too. There are people out there like, I hate Hey Dad.
But know what? As long as they listen to the show, who cares?
I love our hate listeners. You seen the movie Private Parts?
No, Howard Stern.
Yeah. There's a scene in there where the guy says, okay, so people who are fans of Howard Stern, they listen on average for 1 hour a day. And the guy's like, okay, but what about the people who hate him? Okay, the people who hate him say they listen on average 3 hours a day.
Yep.
It's like,
it really is crazy.
It is like that.
There used to be people that would come on the message board and talk about, well, I haven't listened to that in forever. And they would know exactly what we said that week. So you're a liar, first and foremost. And secondly, we appreciate you.
There you go. So that being said, if you are a person who doesn't like the sound of Robbie Faulk's voice, you're not going to hear it too much today. We got two great interviews to put on the show today. And we're going to start
good.
I know. It means we have to work less.
Yes.
I guess my work is the same, but you work less.
And we've kind of been all over the place here early, and we need food.
Yeah, I am on. Lay off me. I'm starving. So let's go into it.
Save some fries for the rest of us.
Let's go right into it. Let's talk to Cole Kublik. You may have already listened to this interview on the podcast feed. Cole was kind enough to give us a good bit of his time yesterday. And I thought the theme of this was, if I could listen to him from a year ago and then listen to him now, the difference in his expectation level for Mississippi State is noticeable. He was not a fan of what Mississippi State was going to be in 2023, and he was spot on in his assessment. A lot of people gave him crap. And we did. And he was right. And you know, that's crow we've got to eat. This year, he was at the spring game. He got to see everything firsthand. I think he's high on Mississippi State. I don't know that it necessarily means he thinks State's going to win 8 or 9 games, but he thinks that the foundation is there to be a successful team this year and move forward. So let's go to that interview first, and then we'll come back. This is Cole Kublik of the SEC Network and ESPN and the UFL and Mac and Cube in the morning. And the guy works too much, let's just be honest. Let's get his thoughts on Mississippi State's spring game. If you watched the spring game on SEC Network this past weekend, you know that Richard Cross and Cole Kublik were on the call for that one. And, well, quite frankly, nobody wants to talk to Richard Cross. So let's talk to Cole Kublik, SEC Network, Mac and Cube in the morning. The man does everything. Last year, you took some heat from Mississippi State fans for your prognosis of the football team. You ended up ultimately being 100% correct. I watched the Cube show yesterday, and by the way, if you're a college football fan, I highly suggest you watch and subscribe to Cole's podcast, The Cube Show. You can find it on YouTube. You seem to think that this is an easier transition for Mississippi State than a year ago, going from the air raid to the system that Kevin Barbe wanted to run. Why? Why is this transition easier?
I just think the level of difficulty of what a lot of positions are going to be asked isn't as great. It's not going to be as foreign for a lot of the guys. There's not a staple play or formation or, I guess, procedure of parts of the offense that are going to be as difficult. And two, I think you look at the guys that you've brought in, you bring in Blake Shapen. I mean, he's been in the pistol. He's been in the shotgun. He's run similar portions of this offense. He's run RPO. He's run zone read. Like he has experience doing those things. Same thing with a lot of the offensive linemen that they brought in. So even though I still think the continuity and the chemistry aspect of it, there's always a difficulty with it there for guys who haven't played football together. what they're going to be asked to do and the level of difficulty that come with it are just not going to be as great as where they were before to what they were going to last year.
This offense, you know, I guess the colloquial term is the veer and shoot. Heupel runs it. Ole Miss runs kind of a variation of it. It goes back to Art Briles at Baylor. It seems to have become the new big thing in college football. This is the offense that people are interested in, that people want to try to incorporate into whatever they're doing offensively. What makes this offense so successful?
I think it takes, Brian, multiple things that sort of even the playing field. And that's all of these offenses that have been unique and very different, and maybe some people would say foreign. The main thing that you're looking for is how do we level the playing field? How do we go up against Alabama or Ohio State or Texas or USC when they had their runs, or Miami when they had their runs? And how are we competitive when we know they're going to have bigger, faster, stronger players? And this offense takes multiple facets of that and puts them together. One, creating space, finding grass. So your receiver splits are going to be massive, and it's going to force the defense into a conflict. Another way you force the defense into a conflict, RPO. So that's another newer portion of an offense that came in the last 10 years that's going to force you to defend it a certain way. And basically, you have to make a decision of what you want to try to defend. Same thing, zone read. Quarterback can keep the ball at times. That's going to be another piece of the offense, depending on how much you have at your backup quarterback spot that you can utilize and that you can run. And then, of course, tempo, you know, going back to some of the hurry up, no huddle offenses via Chip Kelly, Oregon, whatever that was. You take all of those, you put them together. And then I think what's different here is there is still an emphasis of running the football in a downhill nature. And they are going to take shots down the field. They're going to challenge you down the field. And let's be real, with where today's college football, really football in general, has gone, you ought to be taking some shots down the field every game, because there's a better chance that that is going to be a net positive for you than it's going to be for your opponent. So I think you put all those things together and you become very difficult to defend, because you force defenses to make decisions of, are you going to stay at home on the backside to protect quarterback run? Is your linebacker or your safety or your alley defender, is he going to play pass or run? And you have the option to give it or pull it and throw it. Are you going to try to substitute because we're going to go fast? Are you going to keep your safeties at bay and not play the run because we're going to throw the ball down the field? So all of that inherently can give you advantages just based on alignment and based on assignment. And it's an offense that knows how to take advantage of those things.
If he can stay healthy, and that has been the thing that with Blake Shapen that everybody says, like, if he can stay healthy, what's the ceiling on this guy? Because I'm not as you know, tuned in as you are, but I liked what I saw on Saturday. I thought the deep ball was there. He showed some escapability in the pocket. He just looked confident in the offense. How good can he be for State in this year?
Yeah, I think that last thing that you said, I laugh at people a lot of times, Brian, that, oh, you can't take anything from a spring game. There's nothing can be learned from a spring game. I just wholeheartedly disagree with that. Now, collectively, that's probably accurate. I don't think you can judge a team by what you see in a spring game. So you're not going to leave watching a spring game or calling a spring game or being at a spring game and saying, you know what, that team was a 6-6 ball club, but I got them at 9 wins now, by God, because of what I saw and how they looked. That's not real, but you can take specific details of parts of a team, and I think it can go a long way in formulating your opinion. With Blake Shapen, I mean, he has all those abilities that you just mentioned. He has underrated mobility. I think a good way of looking at that would kind of be Peyton Thorne at Auburn late last year. Nobody talked about his ability to move. Nobody talked about his ability to run. Nobody talked about what he could do outside the pocket. But when Auburn needed him to pull the football last year and break a defense down because they weren't respecting it or because they read it wrong, he could go get you 20 yards or 8 yards or 16 yards, which all are very painful to any defense, especially in critical moments of a game. So I think Blake Shapen showed you he has that kind of mobility. We already kind of knew that, but he showed you that he had it. You mentioned accuracy down the field, being on the same page with some of the receivers. But my biggest takeaway for him was the operation of the offense and the comfort level in it. What are the things that he's going to be asked to do on a regular basis? Quarterback, running back mesh. That's going to be something that happens 80% of the time. So that's either handing it to the back or keeping it and running it, or pulling it out of the belly of the back and throwing the football. He looked very comfortable in those moments. He looked very comfortable on some of the timing throws. There was one maybe on a back shoulder on a slant here and there, but all in all, he was pretty accurate and the ball got out on time. Now, people don't like this because it's not cool and it's not exciting, but the go watch him take checkdowns. And if you want to move the ball consistently and you want to be an efficient offense, your quarterback's going to have to take checkdowns. And the other thing he's going to have to do is throw the ball away. And there were two or three moments in that way when Blake Shapen had immediate pressure and he just looked out of bounds and threw the ball in the stands. And if you want a direct correlation to that, watch how Chris Parson handled pressure. It was panic. It was run around. It was try to elude instead of being decisive. Okay, dump it down to back or take two steps, throw ball away. Now, he may have a little bit more mobility and feels like he can keep a play alive. That's fine. But that doesn't often keep drives alive unless you have elite mobility. So those were the things that I took away from Blake Shapen in the spring game that gave me some confidence that this offense could be better than people think.
You talked about on your podcast, you talked about the running back position and you know, not really a game breaker there for Mississippi State. They're after a couple of guys that could possibly fill that role. Rashad Amos is committed to Mississippi State, but apparently that's still sort of up in the air. They're trying to pull in Damian Martinez from Oregon State, but it looks like Miami is going to be a tough team to beat on that one. If State doesn't get a difference maker at running back, you know, what does this offense look like in year one for Jeff Lebby?
I don't think it makes it or breaks it. And, you know, just because and I'll go to last year. Look at Dillon Gabriel. You know, they want to run that position at times. You could go back to when Jared Stidham was at Baylor and watch him pull the ball and keep it a few times. Like, they're not asking him to be Cam Newton. They're not asking him to be Lamar Jackson. But by God, if we can steal 7 or 8 yards 3 or 4 times a game, we got to take that. And I think there was an inherent fear of running Dillon Gabriel last year. There were a lot of instances in which he could have picked up more yards. He had more yards to gain. They would have liked to have called it. But they weren't going to risk it because they needed him throwing the football more. Backup quarterback will be big from that perspective because you'll be able to use your quarterback to do some of those things. But I think what it does is just subtract your explosive plays from that position. And that doesn't mean that it kills the offense. It just, there may be a few drives, you know, they're a little bit more lengthy. There may be, you know, more first downs than touchdowns, and that's okay. And I don't think the backs are by any stretch of the imagination a liability. It's just they don't have that game breaker or that guy that's super explosive that could give you multiple 50, 60, 80-yard touchdown runs in a game. Tennessee kind of had that last year. You see what that offense looks like when you have that type of a back. So I don't think it, like, gets this offense stuck in the mud or anything like that. It's just that you'll be less dynamic from that position. But it's also not bad to be able to grind out yards in this offense from that position, because I think then it almost demands more respect. If you're hitting 1 out of 4, you know, for 50 or 20 yards, as opposed to averaging 5.5, 7.5 per carry, you know, the only way to really slow that down is to add more bodies. You know, the other way to slow down some of your home run backs is to just kind of formulate things to where you can push the offense to not hand them the ball as much, and you'll take your chances other places. So I don't think it makes or breaks the offense. You'd love to have it. You'd love to have that game breaker. And I do think they at least have good options. It's just that none really stood out in the spring as sort of that home run threat consistently.
One thing we've talked about a lot on this podcast is Lebby's first year at Ole Miss with Kiffin and how that team won 5 games. They won 4 SEC games and then they won their bowl game. So all against Power Five competition. Defensively, they were the worst team in the country. I mean, and that's not even hyperbole. They just were. But offensively, they were good enough to win those games. They put up points on everybody. Can that be sort of a template for Mississippi State this year? Can they be a team that just wins games by outscoring people and finds enough wins to get into a bowl game?
A little bit. I think it can. Yeah. I think this defense, when you're talking about if the offense is what we think it can be, and if it exceeds expectations just a little bit, and I think if that happens, you get some good offensive line continuity, you get good football from your tight ends, specifically Trey Orr, and being able to stretch the field, do some things, back solid, quarterback stays healthy, young receiver step up. It can be a very good offense. I think at that point in time, it's just alignment, assignment, effort. Like, can you get lined up correctly? Can you know your assignment on an every down basis? And then just kind of bring your hard hat, bring the effort, bring the energy, and just fly to the football. I don't think it's going to have to be, hey, where's our one-man wrecking crew up front? Or where's our linebacker that can erase our defensive line's mistakes, and make 17 tackles a game? Or where's our lockdown corner that has to have two picks a game for us to be successful? Or our pass rusher that has 2.5 sacks a game? I think collectively it can be okay if the offense is scoring. Part of the problem we have right now in this league is that we have this preconceived notion of every team that's going to be good and bad. Is Georgia going to be really good? Yeah. Is Ole Miss going to be really good? Yes. Bama's going to be good. Okay. Like, I'm fine with that. I think Texas can be really good. I don't think we really know what A&M is going to be. I don't think we know what Arkansas is going to be. I think Tennessee has a chance, but hell, they lost a lot. Could Auburn take a step? I don't know. Hell, Brian, people think Florida is going to win 3 or 4 games. Like, I don't think that that's feasible, to be honest with you. Florida's too good at quarterback, and that scheme is too good. Their coaching staff is too good to win 3 or 4 games. So some of it will depend on what happens to the rest of the schedule. Can Missouri be what they were last year again? That defense was really good. I think their offense will be really good this year. I don't know about their defense. What I do know is they have a chance to stack some wins early. I think Arizona State is almost a must-win game. And if they stay healthy down the stretch, I think they have a chance to pick a few up and potentially be bowl eligible.
Coleman Hutzler is kind of an unknown to Mississippi State fans. He's only done a couple of interviews. He doesn't have a track record that people can go back and point to. When you got a chance to talk to him, what are your thoughts on him, and what do you think the identity of his style of defense is going to be?
I think just playing hard, playing fast. I think he understands that things can be overcomplicated. He coached under Nick Saban. He coached under Kevin Steele. He's been around Will Muschamp. He understands that sometimes it can get lengthy. One of the things that he told us about his defense is trying to find ways to marry up verbiage. And I thought it was brilliant, to be honest with you, because I've been around some of these coaches that just, they want an answer for everything. They want the ability. They want a check and a call for every single movement and every formation and every motion and every shift and trade. And it's just, that's not real. It's just not going to be something that's going to happen. I think you'll see a blend of a 4-2-5 and a 3-4. I know Lebby wants them to be a little bit different on a weekly basis if they can, if the personnel groupings allow it. He doesn't just want to throw the same base defense out on the field each and every week. And I think that comes from Jeff's experience coaching in the league of understanding that, hey, this wasn't what we saw last week. We're going to have to make some adjustments, and that can be difficult to deal with. So I think he has an understanding of what it has to look like, what it needs to look like. I think they'll still search in the portal for a guy or two at each level of that defense. Specifically, they need some depth in a bad way at certain spots. But they got enough up front to be dangerous. And they need some individuals to probably exceed what their expectations are to be a good defense. But if the secondary comes around, I don't think that they'll be a bad defense or a defense that just can't get stops. Specifically, if you're scoring points, I mean, you put teams and offenses in a certain situation that becomes your advantage. And if they can find, if the offense can consistently do that, it helps the defense in different ways.
All right, you've given us a lot of great takeaways today, and I know you're not a hot take guy, but I want you to give me a big overreaction from what you saw on Saturday.
Just from the Mississippi State spring game?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I don't feel like, I mean, I probably overreacted to Jimmy Bell a little bit just because I don't see 6'10", 320 very often. And I'm kind of like rooting for him. I'm kind of hoping that he can find a way to get some reps and some snaps. And I don't know, when I hear Lebby talk about how much the kid wants to do it, and I hear Cody Kennedy talking about how willing he is and like he wants to make it work, and this is not, some weird experiment because he didn't have anything to do and he ran out of basketball eligibility or something. And then when I saw him on the field, he didn't look disproportioned. Which means he doesn't look 6'10". So, he looks like 6'8", 6'7", because he's kind of well proportioned. And I don't know, like he's like fun to look at and fun to imagine being a good football player. So maybe I overreacted to him just a little bit, but I think everything else we were fairly in line on. I didn't hear people going, too crazy about certain guys or certain things. I thought Blake looked really good. I thought some of the young receivers, like Mario Craver, I kind of expected him to do some of the things he did based on what those coaches were telling me. I mean, I've heard really good things about him in the spring. I had two of Kelly Akari's games last year, so I kind of knew what he was about. I knew what he could do. The offensive line looked good. I don't think there was any overreaction there. They had a pretty good day. So I think all in all, it was about what I saw. I don't know exactly what I expected, how different, plus or minus it would be, but I didn't feel like there was a great overreaction in anything.
I agree. I agree with you. Cole Kublick, the SEC Network, Mac and Cube, ESPN, UFL. How's that going for you?
Good. It's going good. I'm a lot of fun with it. Obviously, a little bit different being able to get the access to guys that we have during the games.
Yeah.
But hey, man, it's live tackle football in the spring. You can't beat that.
You cannot. Thanks, man. I appreciate your time.
Anytime, Brian.
All right. Thanks to Cole. Appreciate his time. You heard it yourself. I know you listened, Robbie. He's optimistic about what State is, and it starts on the offensive line. That was his huge criticism a year ago. He's like, I don't know about the transition from the air raid to what Barbe wants to do, and I think it's going to be very difficult. And it ended up being exactly that. This system, he feels like it's more friendly to the change. I think it also makes a lot of sense that you don't have five offensive linemen that are air raid guys now. You've brought in guys from other teams, right? LSU, Texas Tech, North Texas, Memphis, all these different you can get them all on the same page, because probably what they were doing offensively was a little more like what Jeff Lebby wants to do offensively, as opposed to what Mike Leach was wanting to do offensively.
Well, and not to mention, I think that this offense is just much more simpler than what we've seen
the last
few times.
That's what he was saying, yeah.
And it shows in the spring. I mean, we saw some air raid, like the air raid, it took a while to get going. We saw some issues there early on when Mike Leach was here last year in the spring. You could tell that there was definitely some growing pains that the offense was going through. This looked like just about a well-oiled machine last week. I mean, the only real mistake I thought we saw in the game was Kevin Coleman fumbling at the goal line and what was supposed to be a touchdown. That's basically it. I don't remember a whole lot of sacks or, and maybe that's the defense. I mean, who knows? But it just looked like it was much more organized and much more well-designed and more friendly to these players. And, you think to like the Tennessees and the UCFs and the Ole Misses, there have been some issues at times with the offensive line, but it hasn't been a glaring issue. Like, there's a lot of, I think, ways to hide some deficiencies that you have up front.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't have the most talented players up front, but the way that the system works, I think that you're still going to be able to be successful up there more often than not. And I just want to say for the record, we were homers last year. Let's just go ahead and I think with the way that Cole presented that, I think that we were just, maybe it wasn't Homer, and maybe it was just more optimistic that they were
I think
going
we thought that the team, it was such a veteran team. Yeah, and that Rodgers, we bought into the idea that Rodgers wasn't a system quarterback. That was our biggest issue from a season.
And that the offensive line
could make the change.
Was more suitable for
right.
a road grading type
yeah.
offensive line.
We were wrong.
Yeah.
We were wrong.
And the real takeaway here is trust Cole over us sometimes on
yeah.
whenever
I will say this, like, your average guy who goes to media days and picks State last because he just doesn't know any better, never mind. Cole Kublick watches film.
Yeah.
All right, he watches film. He watches the games. He talks to coaches. He played college football. And I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, if you didn't play, because I feel like I know college football. But, yes. Yes, Cole, if he's telling you something and it's
especially on the offensive line.
It's one thing if he's just like, I don't think they're going to be very good, and he's not giving you a lot more than that. If he's breaking down, he's like, this is why.
Yeah.
You can probably trust that.
Well, and
so, we're sorry, Cole.
I mean, honestly, he's usually pretty positive when it comes to SEC teams.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the stuff that he does after the weekend during the season when he breaks down basically every SEC team.
Yeah.
It's usually
He finds the good.
She's the positive.
Unless there's just none.
Yeah, and you know, he watches the film on it all. I mean, he's
watching everything.
Way more locked in than we are. But all that to say, my takeaway listening to that is he's really impressed with the offense.
Right.
And if he's impressed with the offense, if somebody that watches film for a living and talks about it and knows his conference, you know, top to bottom, I trust him. And I trust that what we saw on Saturday this time around isn't the fact that we're a little too close to the situation.
Right.
You know, I really believe – I've seen enough from people that watch the game outside of Mississippi State to know that this offense was impressive on Saturday and that it has a chance to be pretty good this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I really think last year the veteran, the amount of experience they had coming back – on both sides of the ball, that's what skewed me more than anything else. I really bought into the idea that Rodgers could run multiple offenses. Now I don't believe that anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's why he's in trouble at Washington.
And it's really disappointing that now the last two times you had these cycles that we talk about,
you've missed the big year.
All those players returning, this like something like that happened. And that it's just an act of God. I mean, there's nothing you could have done about that.
Yeah, there's nothing,
But it's still just really frustrating that's what happened.
There's no question in my mind that with Mike Leach that the team wins nine games.
Oh, yeah.
No question in my mind.
Because I think the defense would have been able to
They would have lost to LSU. They would have lost to Alabama. They would have lost to... one thing, it's kind of weird. I noticed they lost 51-10 to Texas A&M. But that game is probably different if they come in with a lot of momentum. And they're not, you know, it's probably a little different.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. It's a big what if, but it is what it is. Let's move into the rest of the show. That's brought to you by our friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. Do you like steak? I mean,
I do.
Oh, well, there you go. Then I guess you should probably eat sometime soon.
Becky made enchiladas last night.
Oh.
She has perfected the Mexican dishes.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened, but she makes her own Mexican rice.
Oh.
And that's a little veering off to a different direction, but the enchiladas were outstanding.
These are the things you can do with beef. I mean, there's just so many options.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to cook Italian, beef is great. If you want to cook Mexican, beef is great. If you want to cook Asian, beef is great. Or if you just want to eat a steak, beef is great. So, this weekend, every weekend, nothing beats the sizzle of beef on the grill. Fire up your grill, put a steak on there, everybody's happy. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find the smoked Southern soul food that you are looking for. It's just so good. You know, every time somebody goes to Two Brothers for the first time, they tweet me and Robbie, and they're like, "You were right. You were right." We weren't right about Mississippi State in 2023. We weren't. We'll admit that. But we are always right about Two Brothers.
That's correct.
So, I hope that you guys, the next time you're in Starkville, you will make a trip to Two Brothers, sit on the porch in the Cotton District, enjoy a great meal, enjoy some smoked Southern soul food from our friends at Two Brothers Smoked Meats. Great products and great service is what every business likes to promise you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems, and they've been doing that for 49 years. Quite simply, if you need technology for your business, this is a place where you can call, you can get a great product at a great price, and then if something goes wrong, you know you've got somebody there backing you up with service after the sale. That is really all you can ask for from any purchase you make. Advantage Business Systems has 49 years of doing this, so you know they can be trusted. Give them a call today the next time you need technology in your business. 601-362-9192 or visit them online at absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. If you're going to be in Starkville and you need to get new gear, and you do need to get new gear. You need to get it at Maroon & Co. They have a selection unlike anybody else. They are the exclusive provider of the Bulldog Initiative logo wear. So if you want to wear the polos, the hoodies, the hats that our coaches are wearing, you can only get them at Maroon & Co. You can wear them wherever you want, but you can only get them at Maroon & Co., I guess is what I'm trying to say. Plus, if you're looking for a great new custom-made cowbell, they can take care of you. They've got a partnership with the Bellsmith, who makes the best custom cowbells out there. So check that out. Before you head to the park this spring, head to Maroon & Co. We'll change gears. As you know, if you're a longtime Sports Talk Mississippi listener, you know that when it comes to golf, I am the true voice of golf on that show. I know more about golf than either Richard or Borky does. And that's why it made sense for me to bring Coach Charlie Ewing onto the show. Of course, recently winning the SEC championship, his protege, Julia Lopez Ramirez, now a two-time SEC champion. So I decided to talk with him, get his thoughts on that, and of course about some other thoughts as well. I want to get his thoughts on NIL. So we talked to him earlier today. This is Coach Charlie Ewing, head coach for the Mississippi State women's golf team. We don't have a lot of hard and fast rules here on Thunder and Lightning, but one of them has always been if you win an SEC championship, you get to be on the show. So Coach Charlie Ewing joins us now, Mississippi State women's golf SEC champions 2024. Congratulations, Coach. Talk us through the moment where you knew that the championship was yours and how that felt.
It was a really, really special day and experience. You know, I spent the first half of the matches, the whole front nine, not looking at the updates of the scores or anything, really just keeping myself accountable to being present. You know, something that I know that the team keeps themselves accountable to it. So I feel like that's something that I should do myself. And it was really just helpful to, with the matches that I was with and the players that I was coaching, just help stay very present, making sure that we're actually doing our jobs and executing what we need to do. But as we get to that back nine, it's important to start to know where things stand and kind of start to know how things are flowing. And at the time it was really, really close. I know that Avery, Julia, Izzy, I don't think they were ever down in their matches. And if they were, it was really early in the matches. So for the entire day, those 3 points that we won, they pretty much had some level of control in it for the majority. But there was that point where Avery's match got tied there on the back nine. Izzy was up in hers. Julia was up in hers. And we were at a two. We were up in two, down in two, tied in one. And that was really just, that was the moment where you knew the SC championship was being decided in just in a matter of the next few holes. And for the golf that they played down the stretch with everything on the line, it was really special. Something I'll never forget, seeing Izzy was just automatic with her approach shot. She was just, I mean, she was hitting it right at the flag time and time again. Julia had massive control of her match that day. And she was all, you know, she was three up early and she basically stayed there. And then the clutch shots that Avery hit down the stretch to gain the lead back again on number 13, an incredible four iron on number 15 on a par three that you probably can't see it on TV, but a four iron that gets to probably about a 25 footer, makes par on that hole, win that hole. The bunker shot on 16 was unbelievable. If she doesn't hit perfectly, it goes in the water. And then, of course, the wedge shot that everybody got to see, she hit it 2 foot to win, was it was amazing just how quickly things can change and flow in match play. And I'm just really excited that our team was the one that took the greatest advantage of the opportunities out there.
Yeah, you think about being a coach, right? As a football coach, you have practice, and then in the game, you're calling the plays. Basketball sort of the same way. Baseball sort of the same way. I know what I think I have an idea of what a golf coach does in practice. What does a golf coach do during the tournament?
Well, it depends on the coach. There is going to be a lot more variety from a coaching standpoint than you might see in a football basketball sense, where you know they're so involved every single play. And you know, in basketball, they're dang near out on the court, you know, coaching in the middle of some of those plays. And I know Coach Jan sure is, in golf, a lot of coaches handle it just like a caddy, where you might walk with a player for 18 holes and go through the shot by shot and really be there as a full-time support piece. There are other coaches that will step aside and basically say, hey, we do all our preparation at home. We do all of our coaching at home. When we get to the golf tournament, you just kind of go do your thing. I tend to lean a little bit more on the hands-off when we're at tournaments, but Lauren, our assistant coach, she stays pretty hands-on at the course. And that depends on what the players want. It also depends on the coach's strengths. And that's something I've kind of started to trend a little bit towards, myself being a little bit more hands-off and just stepping in as needed, where the players need my support, need my assistance. And Lauren has been a little bit more hands-on and involved, where the players like a little bit more consistent help from her. And whether it's talking through shots or just staying positively distracted in between shots.
If you ever need anybody just to walk the course and just like make fun of the other golfers, I'm your man. I'm happy to do that for your team. Just to let you know. If you golf, need that psychological edge.
Yeah, well, in golf, you know, there's not enough of the fan interaction of booing other teams and heckling, and I think we could really bring that into the game.
Have you seen Happy Gilmore? It'll be a little bit like that.
We could bring that into the game. I don't know how that'd be received, but I don't know, but we'll think about it.
So you have a conference championship in the bag, and now you move on to the NCAA tournament. So that begs the question, is this a team that can win a national title?
You know, if you ask our team, the answer is yes, and that's really the only opinion that matters to us. So we're really excited about the momentum that we've built up over the last couple of weeks now. Belief and knowing that you can do something is extremely powerful. But when you actually have the proof and the evidence is there and you see yourself get it done, there's nothing that can replace that. So this team now has that proof of what it takes to win at a championship level. At the SEC championship, a lot of those teams, we're going to see them again at regionals. And then if we do our job, then we'll see them again at the national championship as well. So we're going to see a lot of those teams again. And that just is a testament to how strong the conference is. And that's just something that really has boded well for the confidence of this team, that they can look and say, okay, this is what we've done. Most importantly, what we're where we are as a team right now is, okay, how did we do it? And getting really deep into understanding the how, not just that we did it, but how did we do it? So then we can replicate that in a lot of our preparation and our practice, understand where our minds were, how we used our minds as positive tools. So then when we get to the regional tournament, the national championship, that those are things that we can replicate, not just assume that they're just going to happen on their own.
Julio Lopez Ramirez, back-to-back SEC champion. What's the ceiling on her? How high can she go? Can she be somebody that we're looking up in a few years and she's making noise on the LPGA?
I'm certainly not going to be the one that puts a ceiling on her, because she'll probably blow right through it. Whatever is out there that can be accomplished, I have full faith and confidence that she can do it. The LPGA Tour is certainly where she has her sights set. From a mind standpoint, she has what it takes to be successful out there. From a skill standpoint, she certainly has what it takes to be successful out there. Now, of course, there's no guarantees when it gets to the professional level. And I think one of the greatest tools that she has is that she understands that. There are no guarantees in the game of golf. There's no guarantees that she's going to play well at any given tournament that we show up at. And she takes that mindset. I've heard Tom Brady talk a lot about how every single day he showed up at practice, he felt like he had to earn his job. And she brings a little bit of that same mindset of, no matter how much success she's had, she comes to the golf course and says, I have to get better today. And that's the way that she approaches it. That's how she presents herself. That's how she presents to her team. And that's something that bleeds in throughout the team of, not only I have to get better today, but hey, team, we have to get better today. And she's brought a great mindset since winning the SEC championship last week, on an individual standpoint, but also on a team standpoint, of presenting to the team, if we want to win a national championship, we have to perform better than what we did at the SEC championship. We have to be better than what we've been. Even though that was good enough for that week, we need better for what's coming up in these next coming weeks. So her leadership is one of her greatest assets, and she drives herself that way, but also drives this team that way as well. So I think she's got the mind for what it takes to be successful at the professional level, because she doesn't expect anything to ever be handed to her.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with the young lady who previously Mississippi State would have considered its greatest woman golfer. I don't know if you know her or not, but have you spoken to her about this young lady and how they're competing for each other's records here?
Yeah, so I know her very, very well. She actually she actually gave me this ring right here, my first ring, and then this team that we've got here is giving me a different type of ring. We talk about it all the time, and Allie is really just. She has a different role in the program now than she had 10 years ago when she was a player on the team. And she's really enjoyed taking on the mom role. So when we have team dinner, she welcomes everybody over and she has stuff prepared. And she likes to serve the team in that way, but also as a coaching role as well, as our volunteer coach. She likes to serve as a mentor and give them a really good perspective of what it's like to be out on the professional level and what's worked for her. She wants to be available for Julia and her pursuits beyond college golf, because Allie does have that experience at the professional level. Julia is going that direction. She's going to be turning pro in the next 13, 14 months. And that's going to be something that's very new for her. And Allie's nothing but excited and supported for Julia and what she's doing and the record she's breaking and setting and all the success that she's having. And from my perspective, I think it's really cool to have that relationship with Allie and what she's established for this program and the foundation that she built 10 years ago. And now what's being built on top of that and the success that we're having now with a new generation of players that are able to continue and build on what players in the past have done in this program, like Allie and some other great players that have come through here.
You got one Mississippian on your roster, Avery Weed from down there in Ocean Springs. I know that the international scene is where you do a ton of your recruiting, but what's the state of golf and women's golf here in the state of Mississippi, in your opinion?
With a smaller population, there's just not going to be as many players as maybe come out of big population states like California, Texas, Florida. And I would say that's probably true just about any sport. But the quality of golf in the state of Mississippi is it's gotten really good as of late. There's some really good junior players across the state. We graduated our last Mississippian from the team last year, which left us with no Mississippians on the team. And it was a perfect time for Avery to come in and fill that hole. We'd love to have our local homegrown Mississippians on the team. And Avery, she doesn't know anything other than maroon and white. They're a Mississippi State family through and through. So this is the only school that she visited in the recruiting process. And that's something that really means a lot to us, that she was just so committed and dedicated to not just her own pursuit of collegiate golf, but doing it in the maroon and white. She really just didn't want to have any other options than come play at Mississippi State. And over the years, you look at the players, of course, college golf is very international game, like you said, and Mississippi isn't one of those states that has 20, 25 million people across the state. But the Mississippians that do come to Mississippi State have a lot of success. You go look back at Chad Ramey and Allie when they were in school here. And then Hunter Logan's doing big, great things for the men's team on their team right now. Hannah Levi, Blair Stockett, they've had great careers at Mississippi State. Now Avery stepped in and she's had a really good year. And Drew Wilson on the men's side, he's had a really good year in his redshirt freshman year. So there's a lot of Mississippians have come in and had some really good success at Mississippi State. And that's something that we're really proud of. And it's something that we're really excited to share in the recruiting process of the really good Mississippi kids that are coming up.
In athletics today, the top three letters are NIL. And that's what everybody talks about. I personally can't stand talking about it, but you can't get away from it either. But it's always about football. It's always about basketball. With your program, what is the effect of NIL?
So NIL, it's alive and well in every sport and in collegiate athletics. That's what college sports are now, and it's something that I want our team to really be able to take advantage of, because it's something that if it's available to them, I want them to be able to take advantage of anything that they possibly can. They deserve it, and we have a really, really good, genuine support. Supportive fan base and donors and boosters and then the businesses around Starkville want to be involved and want to be supportive. NIL is something that is alive and well in our program. It's something that I believe that it's a very genuine approach to it right now. It's something that I certainly don't want it to be abused. I know there are opportunities for NIL to be something that is abused and taken advantage of and used in the wrong ways. That's not something that I love in collegiate athletics, but I do believe that when it is used appropriately, which I do, I do really believe it is in our game and in our program, that our team has the opportunity to take advantage of. And I'm really excited for those opportunities that anybody earns.
One last question. The average person, who likes golf, when they're off of work, they go play golf. Mm-hmm. What do you do when you're off work?
I don't play golf. I'll tell you that much. Allie, it's like pulling teeth to get me just to come play nine holes with her. I like being outdoors. That's one reason that Mississippi is a great place for me, and Mississippi State is a great university for me to be at, because it's a place where it's really easy to enjoy the outdoors here. It's a really enjoyable place. So I like to hunt. get outside and, you know, get on the tractor and disc up my fields and plant something for the summertime. That's something I plan on doing this weekend. So that's something that I really enjoy. And but right now with Allie playing professionally, that's I don't play golf myself, but I go watch her golf. So I do. I'm very, very professional at watching golf, whether it's our golf team or whether it's Allie's golf. I watch a lot of golf, and I watch it in person. Actually, women's golf. It's not just golf. It's women's golf. So women's golf is my life. That's what I do in my work time. That's what I do in my spare time, is I watch our team, and I watch Allie play a lot.
There you go. Coach Charlie Ewing, Mississippi State Women's Golf, SEC champions. Thanks so much for joining me. Appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian. Hail State.
All right. Thanks to Coach Ewing. Appreciate his time. Really good stuff from him. The last question I asked him, Robbie, I was like, you know, most people, when they have the day off, they go play golf. What do you do?
That's right.
He's like, I don't go play golf.
Get away from it.
He's like, so, thought that was funny. Well, before we get out of here, let's talk a little baseball. Mississippi State gets a 6-4 win over Memphis on Tuesday night. Didn't actually bump up the RPI a little bit. I think they're at 41 now. Let me double check that while we're talking here. This is a massive series for Mississippi State against Vanderbilt. They absolutely have to have, they got to get one. There's no getting around the fact that getting swept at any point, say up to 40, I'm sorry, in the RPI, so that's pretty good. They have to get that. Then a Friday-Saturday series here with Vanderbilt. Vandy and State are kind of the same team, except Vanderbilt took care of their business a little bit more in the non-conference than Mississippi State did. That's why they're ranked 11th, and they're 30-11 on the season, and State is 27-14 on the season. You know, very easily, if State had three more wins, I think they would be right there with Vanderbilt. This is not the Vanderbilt team from 2 or 3 years ago. They don't have the dominant frontline pitching they've had in years past, but they're still a pretty good baseball team. State has to win one. We know that. If State wins two, can we start to play the dream a little dream of hosting thing? Can that thought start to enter your head? Just a little bit.
Yeah, I think
just
a little
back end.
I think a little bit. I mean, it's going to take a lot of work. This team's got to win a lot of games here down the stretch and can't stub their toe against hardly anybody. I mean, I think it would help if you swept these two home series coming up, and then you really need to win this weekend and then see what happens at Arkansas. You'd be in okay shape. The metrics would still be pretty tough from an RPI standpoint, I think. But you think about it, if you beat Vanderbilt and you win a game against Arkansas, I mean, that's going to help you. That's going to bump your RPI up. You're not going to drop. You'll probably move up by beating Alabama and Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And then Missouri, you really need to,
going to be kind of eh.
Yeah, but, you know.
What is Missouri currently?
You cannot. You really need to cancel that North Alabama game.
You know what's funny? Ole Miss played them yesterday, and their RPI went up. Went up two spots.
Well, I don't know how that happened. Went up playing.
Play Missouri, but that's a road Memphis. Game.
True, but they're still like, what, 179?
Yeah, but somehow Ole Miss's went up with that. Missouri is 91 currently. State's next 10 games, by the way. Three against number 19. This is just RPI, not rankings. 19. One against number 22. Three against number 17. And then three against number 2.
Yeah.
You got a real opportunity here to boost this RPI.
Just win 40, one game against Arkansas.
It's at 40. What's the number they have to be at to say they're in the discussion? 25?
Top 25, and then
at 25 with 17 conference wins, I mean, you got a really decent
case. I think
case.
18 is the number to get in the discussion.
Oof, 18 is tough.
It's going to be tough.
That's winning the series at Vanderbilt.
But that's probably where you have to be in the discussion.
Yeah.
I think. And I said that yesterday. I thought 18 would get them in the discussion. They'd have a chance to host. And then from there, probably need to win a couple in the SEC tournament to feel like you're in a good position.
Two at Vanderbilt, two at Alabama, one against Arkansas, and then sweep Missouri. That's 18.
Yes. That's your
That would almost certainly have you in the top 25, assuming you don't.
You would think that, you know,
assuming you don't make a huge screw up and lose to North Alabama.
There's been some posts on the message board about, like, I think somebody found a way to project, but you can't fully project that way because there's so much fluctuation that's going to happen across the board there, you can't just put the numbers in and that's what it's going to be. We don't know who's going to move up or move down in the opponents that you play. I think State moved up yesterday based on some of the opponents that they've played winning games. Like Georgia beat Clemson last night. So there's so much that can happen. I can't look at that and definitively say, you know, State's going to have this number RPI if they win this amount of games. All right. I know is the more games they win, the better their chances of making the NCAA tournament are, and then from there, potentially hosting. Mm-hmm. So you take care of your own business. More often than not, it takes care of itself.
Yeah.
So they really need to just focus on a weekend at a time, a game at a time, and every SEC win is big. To me, it's not about hosting right now for Mississippi State. It's about getting back in the postseason and firmly being in the postseason.
Yeah.
And when you get to that, I'm saying probably 15 wins is where they need to be to feel great about making the tournament. Mm-hmm. If they have 15 SEC wins, they're in. There's no doubt about it. Oh, they're
definitely in. Yeah, for sure.
There's no doubt about it.
No,
14.
Question. Probably close.
It's going to be close, but they should be in with 14.
Yeah.
15 will get you in. That's five more SEC games.
Yeah.
Can you win five more games? I think you can. I think that's attainable. And when you get to that 15th win, then it's about let's keep pushing and see if we can get a weekend at Starkville. And go from there. Now they've put themselves in bad position with the non-conference schedule they played. But
so here's the tale of two Bulldogs, right? Mississippi State is 40th in the RPI. They're 27-14. They're 10-8 in the SEC,
mm-hmm.
which means that they are 17-6 in the non-conference. Then they're 40th, right? And as we mentioned before, four quad four losses.
Yep.
Georgia is 9-9 in the SEC, so they're a game back. And of course, State took two out of three. They're ninth in the RPI because they're 21-1 in the non-conference, including they beat Clemson last night, who was fourth going into that game.
They're doing what They're doing what State did when Chris Simonis first got here.
They took, but they're not as good in the conference as State was that year.
Yeah, but you know, State started SEC play in 2021 like 3-6,
but they finished 20-10. So yeah.
They did, but what I'm saying is, in 19 and 21, they were beating almost every non-conference team they played.
The first 2 years Lamonis was here, I think he lost one non-conference game, and it was to USM.
Well, 2020, lost a few. Yeah, but still, I mean, they lost to Texas Southern that year.
That was a bad. Yeah, it was a bad loss.
But he was kind of getting it under control. But basically, for the most part, through the first 3 years, Mississippi State took care of business in non-conference play, and that has not been the case the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost them, we've said it all year, it's either going to cost them the NCAA tournament or it's going to cost them hosting.
Yeah.
I think.
It's going to be hosting. I think they're going to get into it. They're good enough.
This team is good enough.
They have to collapse.
Yeah, they've found ways to win, so it's not a complete disaster team. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of things that you can fully predict because they've been kind of up and down, but
Notre Dame is the team that's right ahead of Mississippi State. They're 39th in the RPI. 0-15 in quad one games. All of their wins are 12 of their 20 wins are quad three.
Why are they so high? They've kind of fallen off with Link Jarrett leaving.
Yeah,
Link Jarrett left, it's just kind of like, eh.
All right, that's it for today. Tomorrow, a little bit more preview on this Vanderbilt series, plus some more football talk, maybe some more clarity on some things in the portal as well. Guys, have a great Thursday. Robbie and I will be back with you on Friday. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.